Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Simon Dyer. I am the host of the Norton & Ailes Cricket Club podcast this evening. I am hosting episode one, and I am joined by a very special guest, Mr. Ben Furnival, the much revered, the infamous, the very outspoken. And if I was to cut him in half, he would be Norton and Hales through and through. Good evening, Ben.
Good evening, Simon.
Good evening. So, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast this evening.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. And when I thought, who could we have as the first person on the podcast, I couldn't think of anybody more that's been involved in the club for as long a period of time as yourself, and who's been through thick and thin, and we'll go into the journey that Norton have been over the last sort of 10 or 15 years, from the heights of winning the Premier League through to Stone League relegation to where we currently are now. So again, I couldn't think of anybody more prominent for that, really. So why don't you start by introducing yourself and telling everybody when you first started at Norton and what your first memories of walking through the hallowed fields of Bairstown Road.
I started my cricketing career at age 12. I think it was the first time I played in a second team game back in the day. Prior to that, I was involved in the club. My brother was playing when I was in my 1 to 12 years of age area. Probably my first recollections of the cricket club was A, watching him, and B, playing pool, stood on a beer crate with a chap called Wagger Cadman as my partner. I don't know how old I was then, probably 6, 7, not much older than that really. But then moved on to scoring at 9 or 10, and then started playing at 12, I'm pretty sure it's 12, in the Cheshire and Lions League back then.
Cheshire and Lions, okay. So you mentioned your brother there. Now, my knowledge of the Furnival family, which is literally ingrained in Norton and Ailes Village more so than probably any family that I can think of. You were saying that, is that Jack and Tom's dad?
No, this is Richard, who now lives in Lancashire.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Sort of Preston, Blackburn, Blackpool way.
And does he still play?
No, not anymore. No.
Okay. No. He's found the good side of life. Being changed to the cricketing winning life. Okay, cool. So you started playing second team at the age of 12, and what was your sort of resounding memory of sort of cricket back in the day? Obviously, because you're, let's be honest, you're still trying to hang on and playing now in your early 30s, back sort of 18 years ago. What?
22 years ago.
What were your resounding memories of playing second team cricket?
I wouldn't say they're cricketing related memories per se. I'd say they're more characters. I just remember the likes of Adrian Harvey and Mick Hanley and Mick Clues, Chris Ball, and various other people that aren't playing anymore and have moved away, that sort of stuff. I just remember characters and being around and, you know, enjoying a beer after the game at 12 years old, which probably shouldn't have been, but anyway, there we go. And that's different times. And I just remember, you know, the old green book that used to be there. As I say, my cricketing ability at 12 years old was not particularly great. Well, it's not now, but it wasn't then. That's a certainty.
Well, I shouldn't worry about. I always remember the late great Bob Cherry was the founder and administrator of the Kids Rev League under 17s for such a long period of time. He always used to describe himself as his ability massively was outshone by his enthusiasm for the game. I think that massively shows for most club cricketers, I think, and it's always that social aspect, the characters and things in the game that we always look for. And we'll come back to that a little bit later. I apologise about the noise in the background. As advertised, we are hosting today's podcast live from 10 Green Bottles in Newcastle. So we've got a little bit of humdrum music in the background, a little bit of good chatter. So I apologise for the background noise. So you started at 12. When I first joined the club 4 years ago, you were the first team captain. God knows why.
Nobody else wanted to do it.
But you were. And obviously, my first memory of playing against Norton and Hales was way back in 1999 when I did a season at Hempstead Cricket Club. When Andy Kenvin as professional at the club that year, I was literally 17, 18 at the time, and it was always a notoriously hard place to come to. I mean, from the dizzy heights of winning the Premier League, I mean, what was your involvement in those sort of 10, was it 15 years ago, 16 years ago that they won the Premier?
Yeah, 2002, so crikey, 16 years ago, yeah, it was, yeah. What was my involvement? Not massive amounts, really. I was more second team, well, I was playing second team then. Yeah. I had the odd cup game and the odd run out when they were short, etc. But I don't know how many games I played in the Prem winning season, probably none. The year after I played a few, and then when we got relegated to Div 1, I played quite a bit that year. But again, you know, ad hoc really. Cup games played a bit on a Sunday.
I mean, going back to that, I mean, Norton and Ailes were probably the first team, and I'm not going to dare say the last thing that we'll be able to do, but to go from the rise of prominence that they had, obviously, yeah. The Emirates are here as the world, which obviously gone on to play for Test cricket for South Africa, massive first-class careers for Hampshire and other counties alike. What was the atmosphere at the club like at the time? Because I know it was kind of a very fast and quick transition from where they were, which I think was back in the old North Saxon district, sort of senior A,
senior B, then senior A, and we went through and ultimately, well,
because that's when the league changed, yeah. What was the general atmosphere like at the club? Because I know, in dispatches, I know some people have got their good points about it, and some people haven't really. I mean, in your own eyes, what was the atmosphere like at the club?
It was certainly very interesting back then. It was really unique times. We obviously went through a lot of transition. There was a lot of players that came, and it was fantastic winning the league. And there was a great buzz around. I mean, everybody says that, you know, Norton Hills paid a lot of players back then. Actually, if you look back, we didn't actually pay as many as people may think, which is actually quite a big thing. The boys won it because they had an amazing camaraderie between them. The first team was buzzing. You know, I remember a couple of, my dad had a pub in Market Drayton, and I remember a couple of the nights out the boys used to have. And they were carnage, and they really were a team. And that's why, that was probably my memory of the sort of Premiership winning days, where they were very much a team.
Okay, so obviously you've got Imran Zahir, probably, arguably, the much revered and probably the most successful club professional in local times.
Yep.
Who were the other key characters at that time, though? Because I remember you've got Darren Long on that side, Nick
Corkin. John T. Corkin was still about, yeah, he was playing a bit. The characters, oh crikey, well, you've mentioned two big ones there. Longy, obviously. Longy might be listening to this.
Well, we get to play against Longy this year because he's moved to Kidsgrove. Kidsgrove coming to Division 2,
yeah,
so that'll be
welcome back, Longy.
Welcome back to Bearstone Road, that'll be good.
Yeah, obviously Longy. Imran was just fantastic, you know, fantastic to watch as a kid. I didn't play with him that much, but, you know, when he turned up for a net or we watched the cup game or whatever it was fantastic to watch. Taffy Kenvin, We had Jonathan Slater, who's a local farmer just down the road, who I remember being a good bat. There is lots of names. Simon Beckett, who's now playing at Rogue Park, having been down south for numerous years. He was sharp back in the day, not so much sharp now.
We all feel his pain.
Sharp when he gets to the bar. Martin Rowley, obviously, is a name not to be missed. You know, a Norton and Ailes stalwart, really. Still knocking around the club. And then we had the likes of John T. Corkin and others that were around. There's a couple that sort of came and went. Ed Cahooley and Coatsy and people like that. So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, the names I've mentioned in the previous sort of...
I mean, if I was to say, we stand, as I said, the reason why I want you to be the first person to quit, if I was to meet somebody who, maybe in sometimes, rightly and wrongly, and some of the stuff that you say, and obviously you are quite outspoken, but I would definitely say you are one of the most passionate people I've met, that, again, if I cut you in half, you would be sort of tractable, you're not the nails through and through. What was it like going through from the dizzy heights of the Premier League and then the rights and wrongs of essentially falling straight back through from where that original climb from prominence came? It must have been a different time. I mean, It's yeah, I mean, you look at local cricket at the most level, a lot of people don't hang around through the bad times. A lot of people, you know, because of how things are at the minute, people will move. I mean, you've been there through it thick and thin. What was it like, obviously, going through all that?
Interesting roller coaster, really. Well, the overriding thing is the club would not be here had it not have been for a certain number of individuals, and really shouldn't name names, and I'm sure I'll forget somebody, but the likes of Martin Rowley, the likes of Paul Evans, in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, Rowley Taverner, those sort of characters, Sue Rowley, you know, these sort of characters, the club simply would not have run without them, and it wouldn't, the gates would have been closed numerous years ago when the clubhouse was burnt down, you know, and we were playing cricket in porter cabins. It was an absolute nightmare. Obviously prior to that we fell back through the leagues, and again, you know, it was just, we had to have 3 or 4 or 5 key members that stabilised the club, which remarkably they sort of did, and how they did it and why they didn't walk away, you know, is just loyalty, I suppose, more than anything else.
It's something that's not found in, you know, I think it's one of the different, I mean, I think going back to sort of 2009, 2010, I visited Bearstone Road in a sort of re-galvanised All Saints side when the porter cabins were at the prominency in that sort of middle of the period. And I think that the key thing that I got at the time was it was very much a club that got people that wanted to be part of it, and then kind of, and I suppose same as any club really, you always got that nucleus of people that make it tick, and the bigger the clubs, obviously they've got the bigger the nucleus and things like that. And I know from the recent AGM that we both sat in, that was one of the big things that Norton were trying to do, is concentrate on making that nucleus that's come forward. So okay, so I think I joined in 2013-14, so 4 years. So Stone League was obviously the bottom of that ebb.
Yeah.
Obviously the new clubhouse is up and going. It's a beautiful place. It's a very welcoming place, a place that people love to spend their sort of the weekends. What would you say is the big resigning factor of the club's re-emergence now as to what it was back in the day, sort of that rise, sort of where would we have been, sort of 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003?
If we talk about the last 4 or 5 years, again, we went through a massive transition. We had a decent side that was in the North Staffs League and ultimately fell into the Stone League, and a couple of senior players, well, they were actually younger lads, but senior players at the time left the club for various reasons. A couple of old heads left. Again, left us in a very perilous position, but we managed to really, quite honestly, fudge a couple of sides together and get out of the Stone League, and we did extremely well. Coming out of the Stone League, we managed to, well, your brother was a huge signing, Mike Dyer, and that suddenly we got the roller coaster back on an upward keel, which was a major thing for us. So bringing in characters, and our club has always been about characters. That's how we survived, really. And we, again, I think we brought in characters. Characters were already there, the likes of Simon Lyne, you know, myself, I suppose, in some respects. But bringing in more characters and cricketers, you know, as I say, Mike then brought in you, Tiff.
Zaffer
was massive for us for a couple of years, 3 years, is it, I think. Massive. Fantastic bloke. And a true... true competitive cricketer, a lot of time for Zach, and he did us the world of good. And then see our nephew Jack coming back, that's been, over the last couple of years, has been a big boost for the club. And that, we just say the roller coaster seems at the moment to be back on an upward curve, which is fabulous, really.
Good. Well, we mentioned the upward curve, and we've got a big thing at the moment where we're really trying to reinvest in the youth, like starting from the grassroots, big thing. You were involved in the junior section last year.
Yep.
Obviously starting from the under-8s. I know we're going to be introducing under-10s this year. What's your main message to anybody who, in the local area, that might maybe listen to this, maybe got friends listening to it, involved in the club, maybe they've got people who are involved. What message do you have if they were looking to get their young little boy, little girl, son, daughter, nephew, niece involved in the club? What advice would you give them, and what sort of good points would you say that, as it stands at the moment, an uprising, a resurgence of Norton and Ales, in my own professed words, the home of cricket in North Shropshire. What advice would you have to any parent that was looking to get their child involved in cricket?
I think the only advice would be to come down. Advice, I'm not sure I could give advice, but the things that I want to tell people really, and parents and alike, is the enjoyment that they can have out of it. It's a fantastic, I'm very biased opinion, I know that, but it's a fantastic club, it's a fantastic environment, we have a great pavilion, a good group of lads that are coaching. The under-8s last year, they did remarkably well. We took them from never playing cricket before, so they won a game against Wood Lane for about 4 or 5 games from the end, and they had a couple of very, very close great scrapes against Leeside and other sides, and they're going to be good little cricketers, you know. And as I say, we may be like other clubs, we only have a small catchment of people, we only have a small catchment of kids, and we want to say that we really look after every single kid that comes to the club, and I think that's probably our USP in a lot of ways. You know, we don't care about ability, we just want kids to enjoy it, to have a run around, and we want the parents to have a beer and a burger on a Friday night, and or sausages or chips or whatever it is that we've got on the Friday night, and that's we want you to be part of the family, and that's what we try and sort of sell it on, is it is a family club, and we don't profess to be anything more than that. We're just a local family club, and that's like my big overriding message really.
I think going back to grassroots, I think it's really important to remember that. I mean, I grew up at a club in Stoke, Longstreet Club. At the time, I always felt that that made me into being a human being, the social aspects of the characters that are around the club, just the social standing. I've still got lifelong friends from there, and obviously the teams that you play against. And I think one of the biggest things that, having been involved in Norton for the last 3 or 4 years, when you compare it to the other clubs that are in the area, yes, it's on an upward spiral, but not only that as well, it's on an upward spiral from within rather than sort of the outside influences. If you were to sort of look at what is the core of Norton and Ales Cricket Club, it is people from within the village, people have been there a long standing time, and people are looking to build from the place forward. And I think, you know, it's one of the most amazing villages I think I've ever come across. And also on top of all that, you know, the infrastructure that the club are building, you know, the facilities get better and better over and over again. You know, there's very well documented issues in the local areas regarding other clubs. And it's just one of those things that with the amount of coaches, the amount of infrastructure and the general feeling on the place, it's just a really, really nice place to be. And I know it's a very massive statement to make in a huge farmer-led village like Norton and Ales, but it is essentially the biggest back garden in the village. And it's like, that's essentially what it's there for, really. So, okay, moving on. What we'll do in the next segment of the podcast is we'll move on to your general thoughts on cricket as an overhaul, rather than sort of going through Norton and Ales. And then, by the way, it's your round, so get to the ball. This is the Norton and Ales Cricket Club podcast. Okay, welcome back to part 2 of the podcast. I'm here with a special guest, Ben Fearnable. Really insightful first half of the podcast, talking about past, present and future of Norton. In terms of cricket in general, obviously a lot of club cricketers, as we touched on earlier in the podcast, their enthusiasm for the game massively outweighs their ability. So we all massively turn to the general agenda of grassroots club cricket, county cricket and international cricket. So we'll start with local cricket initially. In your own mind, what is the current state of local cricket? We're not just talking North Staff, South Cheshire Cricket League, because I feel the administration do a very good job in a very difficult time, a very social media-led time. But in terms of the general standard of cricket, I mean, we're in a very prominent place in where we are, because obviously we have very local clubs that play in the Shropshire League, the Cheshire League, the North South Cheshire League, and the Birmingham League.
Yeah.
What's your general overview of club cricket? What's where's the standard at? And sort of where would you like to see it?
Very interesting question.
It's a loaded question. But you are Ben Fearnable, Mr. Outspoken. I expect an answer, Benjamin.
Where do I think cricket's at? Cricket is far too money driven, simple as that. There is far too many teams paying players that do not warrant being paid. And that to me sometimes spoils it. And it disappoints me in a lot of ways. And when you have guys that come through your ranks and then suddenly other sides locally decide to, you know, offer money to them, it's disappointing. No doubt about that. But you've got to get over that. You've got to work with it, and you've got to realise that's where we're at. It's always interesting that when you hear of other local sides that are really struggling. You know, there's perils of our town down the road from us at the moment that are really struggling, and that's sad. Really sad. I don't think anybody takes great pleasure in that at all. If they did, well, I wouldn't want them associated with Norton Hales, really. That's not what we're about. So cricket is, to my mind, struggling. From when I started, there is less people, A, interested, and B, playing, I think, generally. You know, look at the sides that have gone by the wayside, and you look at the sides now that talked about in our league itself, that like St Betley, you know, really prominent, excellent club, similar in a lot of respects to us. You know, they've pulled out their second team for next year, and it's sad, and that, you know, it's disappointing, but it's where we're at. You know, years gone by, everybody wanted to play every Saturday and Sunday, but that really has gone. I mean, I must admit, I've never been a great Sunday cricketer. I've never really particularly enjoyed playing on a Sunday. And I have to say, I think the league have done a good job in allowing clubs to say yes and no to playing in those competitions, which I think, as I say, that's a big plus from the league, that they've realised that actually there is only so many people that want to play on a Sunday or have the availability to play on a Sunday. Cricket will always continue at grassroots. It's a fantastic sport. It offers great camaraderie to whoever. It's a great leveller, and I think that's the key that I've always thought of cricket. It is a fantastic leveller. It doesn't matter where you come from or what your job is, everybody on that pitch is the same, and everybody in that bar is the same. You have a beer with your mates after the game, and it doesn't really matter whether you're living on a shoestring or you're a multi-millionaire. It doesn't matter. It's a great leveller.
I think from what you're saying there, I think the biggest thing that I picked up on, and I think the way that life is changing in general, cricket being such a long game, and this is representative of the rights and wrongs of Test cricket, One Day cricket, they fiddled with that, changing it from 6 overs to 50 overs, and then obviously the emergence of 2020 cricket, and then even now the sort of rehash sort of 15 overs league. Cricket is such, time is a commodity, and cricket takes up so much time on a Saturday and a Sunday, and I think one of the biggest things I would counteract with that is some of the best friends and associates and acquaintances that I know have come through cricket, because you spend so much time with them and you build such good relationships with them, and as you said, camaraderie, and you get to know the characters. It's just one of those situations where, yes, it's character defining, it's a great life lesson, good social lessons, but at the same time it is so time consuming. And I think what needs to happen, especially with clubs, is the clubs need to be coherent, and they need to make sure that the atmosphere and the membership and the community that they make is the way it needs to be. Because without a community within a club, without that sort of camaraderie, it will only get sort of ripped to shreds, really. And you've got to kind of, same as anything, really, you've got to keep the underbelly coming through, you've got to keep the interest stoked, you've got to kind of make it more than just what happens on a Saturday afternoon or a Monday night or whenever the club night is. It's got to be essentially a sort of a 365 thing, really, and it's just one of those things moving forward. So that's local cricket, and how do you feel that sort of dictated and moved on into sort of the county game? I mean, I'll be honest, from a press point of view, I don't really follow the county championship anymore because that seems to have taken a back seat. I follow a little bit of the sort of the vitality sort of the 50 over game and the 20 over, whatever name it's kind of operating under at the moment. Where do you feel, is there still a connect between local cricket and county cricket? What's your sort of thoughts on that?
Difficult question. I'm the same as you. I don't really massively follow county cricket. I'm not an avid supporter of any particular county. If I had a preference, I'd probably follow Yorkshire for some bizarre reason. I don't know why. I'm not so sure that the minor counties format works. I don't particularly have a great reason for that. I'm not quite sure what minor counties offers, really. You've got all these development sides now, and you see all the second team sides that are out there for the various counties, and I'm not quite sure where minor counties fits in. You know, the people that are playing minor counties have generally got a 9-to-5 job, etc., etc. It means they've got to take time out from work. Off Staffordshire, Shropshire, Cheshire really putting out their very strong side every single county, minor county championship game or unicorns game or whatever it happens to be. The answer is frankly no. And where the ECB take that and where they look to change that is, I don't know. Whether they bring minor counties into a semi-professional level, I don't know, but I'm not quite sure where the minor counties game is going to go, really.
No, I think, I mean, having been involved in that setup for a very brief period, I think the thing that I look at is it seems to be a struggle between availability and essentially sort of people's ambitions, really. And I think it's almost like a county setup with a club mentality, because you look at the Staffordshire setup without that core nucleus of people like Nick Archer, Dave Cartledge, Nick Warner, people like that, it would not exist. And I think from that point of view, I mean, you're wrong, you look at the legends of the game, Dave Cartledge, one of them, Pete Wilshaw is currently one of them. I think the problem you've got with that is it used to be seen as a hotbed of talent to go into the county game, but with second team county cricket and development 11s, all that sort of stuff, you've probably got a good point into sort of where it's at, especially with it's now classed as a unicorn championship and they've got rid of the unicorns development 11. The funding for that has dried up, and there has been opportunities, because that's also the way they will look at it. There have been opportunities created. I think it just falls into that bracket of let's see where that goes over the next 5 years. I think it'll be a very difficult sort of place, I think, unless there's more funding pushed into, because as life becomes a quicker option, the demands obviously come forward. Okay, test match cricket. Okay, two hot topics. Put my words out. It says beer in here. By the way, the real ales they've got in here is, yeah, they're good.
Fantastic.
So massive thanks to 10 Green Bottles for hosting today. Johnny Bairstow.
I understand he was missing for the first two games because
injury, first up.
He was injured.
and obviously batting with three, which is a hot topic, because there's one spot that needs filling. I'll ask you a point blank. Is Johnny Bairstow the new future number three for the Test match side?
Yes.
Why?
Why give me a one word answer?
Why do I give you a one word answer? A, there's nobody else out there. So that answers that, really. The boy's got a bit of class. Yes, he plays the game in the new era of cricket. He plays it in a slapdash sort of way, and for a test match number three, you think, you know, is that the way to play cricket? Well, to me, I think it is, really. You look at the games in Sri Lanka this winter, they've been played in a real tempo that it just shows that test cricket is gone. The days of Dower run rates 2.2 and all that sort of rubbish, quite frankly, are gone. You know, even in those slow turners across Sri Lanka, England have wanted to score at 3.5-4. They were the third session of the last test, I think it was the second innings. They were going at 5.5-6 and over, and they just turned the game. I love the brand of cricket that England are playing generally. You know, I think Bairstow, I don't see anybody else being number three. Looking at folks, he looks fabulous gloveman, fantastic gloveman. Far better than Butler and Bairstow in the couple of games that I've seen. So yeah, I think Bairstow, why not? Really? Why not?
And that's a very important point, because I think the biggest thing is, you look at people like Johnny Bairstow and you mentioned Josh Butler there, they are two match-winning batsmen in their own right. And historically, if you go down the years, obviously people have hidden wicket-keeper batsmen just to give them a rest, and they spent a day and a half out in the field. Do you feel that Ben Folkes coming in and he can clearly hold a bat in his own right? I mean, I think he's got a test match average, I know he's only played two tests, plus of 100. So I think from a point of view of that, is it very much a case of we would get much more from Bairstow and Butler with Folkes in the side?
I think yes was the answer to that. I'd say yes was the answer to that. It's clear from, if you watch the reaction from Bairstow today, which is quite incredible. Never seen anybody so revved up scoring 100 ever, full stop. You know, he was obviously really, really seething about the fact that he hadn't got the gloves on. He wants the gloves, he's made it clear in the press. You look what he wants to get those gloves back. You look what competition does, and competition often breeds success. So to me, Bairstow wants them back. He's going to prove it. And the only way he's going to, well, there's two ways he's going to prove it. If one, Folkes' form goes down, or Bairstow goes to the county game and he looks amazing with the gloves on. Personally, I think England have found a really good balance. And I think England are up there as the number one side in the world. Yes, they're not on paper at the moment. I think they're number two at the moment. But I don't think there's any other side as balanced as England, potentially, with the amount of, you know, you look at Wokes, you look at Curran that aren't playing, Anderson's not playing this test. They have got so many options, it's untrue. And the strength and depth is quite incredible, really. They've got to sort out the opening partnership. Jennings, to me, is not good enough. I've seen nothing from Jennings that changes my opinion. Yes, he's got 140 off, but still, I just don't see it. I've seen enough in Burns to think that he looks a decent cricketer. Yes, he's unorthodox. I quite like that. I actually, this is a real curveball, but I think that Wokes could do a job opening in Test match cricket. People laugh at me, but I actually think Chris Wokes could do a job opening in Test match cricket, as bizarre as that may sound.
Okay, I'm not going to laugh. It's definitely a curveball. I would argue with the current bounce, going back to the original point you made about Bairstow and the way he plays the game, and you look at the way that England's middle order is at the moment, if you were to, I still can't, having played with and against him, and also seen what he can do in the 2020 and the one day game, I still don't understand why England haven't given a consistent run in the Test match side to Alex Hales. because you've got a left hand right hand opening partnership, yeah, which would throw,
yeah,
the best new ball partnership. I mean, why we've consisted with two left handers, we've had a double left handed opening partnership for as long as I can remember. And then when you counter out that, you've got a decent array of left handers, Moeen Ali, Ben Stokes, people coming in with big bounce coming across the line. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I think politically there's definitely a few rumours going around the circuit that since Stokes has come back on the side, given the whole off-field antics, there's a feud between Stokes and Hales. I don't really know where that sits, but in my mind there's a good way to go with Hales.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you, really. Hales to me is a good cricketer. He's obviously got a weakness outside off peg as his best, really, but you know, that's their game. They attack the ball, they want to get to the ball.
Play heavy hands, they do.
You know, they're going to get caught behind. That's the nature of the way that they play. As I say, I am quite critical of Jennings. I just don't see him as an international cricketer. I really don't. Who would I bring in with him? Well, yeah, Hales is an option. Roy is an option. Bairstow is an option. And going up and opening. I don't disagree with you. I think Hales is an option, certainly.
Okay, right. Just end this section. I'm going to put you under the thumb. Give me your England top five, back in order, in your preference.
Burns, Wokes, because I like curveballs, I like something different. Bairstow, Root, Stokes.
Okay, cool. Right, part two of the podcast finished. We'll come back and we'll put Ben in the class with some quick fire answers. Okay, welcome back for part three of episode one of the Norton and Hales Cricket Club podcast. I'm joined by a special guest, Ben Furnival. Right, Ben, enough of the general discussion. Tell me, put you under the cosh. First question, okay. Best international professional you've ever played against?
Otis Gibson.
Otis Gibson, why? What sets him above the others?
He was my school coach at the time, and we played a Barney McArdle trophy game at home. And I remember Alan Blaw, who was a Norton stalwart, scoring about five off him, but there must have been about 40 leg byes, and Otis Gibson was seriously wound up. When I came to bat at like number 10, he was less wound up, but he was bowling quick, and I'd never forget it. And he ripped me the next day on Monday about how he'd try to hurt me all Sunday. It was just good fun, and he's a good player.
Totally agree. Having played with and against Otis, one of the most fierce competitors, but also at the same time one of the most amazing gentlemen you'll ever wish to meet as well. Brilliant, so yeah, I fully agree with that. Okay, so I think I might know the answers to this one. Best international professional you've ever played with?
Imran Tahir, obviously.
Why? I know why, but tell me, in your own words.
The boy is class. He's amazing cricketer. Amazing cricketer. I wish I was a few years old, and I wish I was a few years better to have played with him more. There are very few games that I did play with him. The man is just absolute class.
Yeah. Good. Like I said, the man is absolute class. Okay, cool. Right, the contentious issue, which just might give a few things away here. So, best paid club cricketer you've ever played against?
Best paid club cricketer.
I know there might be an element of, I'm guessing he was paid, but who cares?
The best, blimey, that's a very, very, very difficult question, actually. I'll answer
who's in between? Because you look like you're pondering between two.
I'm trying to think of who, actually. Let me come back to that. What I can tell you, the best, probably shouldn't say this on record, best paid player, amateur, or whatever you want to call them, Long.
Go safe with this one.
So how, I'm trying to think whether I played against Longy, actually. No, I don't think I have. I'd have to have some more time to think about that. Bad answer.
You can't sit on the fence.
Bad
answer. You're not Trevor Brookin. You can't sit on the fence. Okay, cool. All right, well, I'll throw my hat into the mix on this one since you're letting everybody down. Best played amateur I've ever played against. I would probably have to say goes down as Ian Cargill from Modestum. Always on you, always at you, fiercely competitive, hurt your back ball, and probably the best grabber I have ever seen at first, second, first, gully. The guy is an absolute animal. Absolute, he was on you, and he's going to hurt you. I mean, anybody's got a Saturday record of 232, you know, in 50 overs, he's going to hurt you. So I'll take that one. The best played cricketer I've ever played with. Best paid cricketer I've ever played with. I would probably have to say, in the modern era, who I've played with. Best paid cricketer I've ever played with would have to be a gentleman by the name of Richard Sims, when I was playing out at Swaddeston, Simbot, former Zimbabwe international. Cricket master at Norwich School, right arm off spinner, absolute sheer and abundant class of the bat. Could hurt people, talk people out. But again, first chap in the bar, first in the shower, first out, buying everybody a beer. So I'd say that's where my money sits on that one. Okay, right. One of them easy questions for this time. Cool. We're not finished the podcast until you answer that question. Club cricketers, non-paid, sheer amateurs.
Yeah.
Again, who knows? Best amateur you've played against?
Best amateur that I have played against.
Well, actually, I'll turn this around a bit. Under-18s days, in some ways, this might sound silly, but
we had a great battle with Leeson, Notting Hill's Leeson, with friendly but good battles, and the likes of Coops and those sort of boys, actually, to me, they were great cricketers in their own right. You know, not the best that I've played against, but competitive, friendly in a lot of ways. They were great days. So I'm going to say, as I like curveballs, so not the best cricketers, not the best amateur cricketers, but Leeson under 18 team back when we were playing under 18 with a general A's A. Okay. I like curveballs.
Wrong sport, but yeah, that's the way you go with it. Okay. Right, okay. Best amateur you've ever played with? It's non-played club cricket.
Okay, the simple answer to this, and I only played with him not even a handful of times, Mickey Blaw. People probably wouldn't know Mickey Blaw nowadays, but Mickey Blaw, what a cricketer. Norton Hale, born and bred, left-handed bat, left arm, spin, call it medium pace at times. But what a fabulous cricketer.
What period did he play then? When did he hang his boots up?
Mickey must have had his boots. Oh, blimey. 18 years ago, probably something like that, he decided to go and play golf after he broke his finger. But a fabulous finger.
Okay, cool. Take that one. And then, obviously, you've been involved in local cricket for a while now. If you were to pin your hat on somebody you've seen floating around the local game, who do you feel is one person to watch? Who do you feel is one that we may have as a jewel in the crown that might make it, either on the county or international scene?
The guy I saw a couple of years ago, maybe less than that, was Liam Banks, who is making it via England under-19s and Warwickshire. I've watched him before and thought he looks absolute class. There's obviously Parkinson who's doing well, and he's going through the game. But Liam Banks of the last couple of years is probably the one that I would say looks like he's a ready-made professional cricketer in my mind.
Don't disagree with that. Okay, so Norton Ailes 2019. Okay.
Yeah.
Committee member.
Yeah.
As we already said, you are Norton and Ale's stick of rock.
Yeah.
Hopes, expectations.
Hopes.
Probably in terms of senior cricket consolidation. You know, I don't think for you to be challenging, that would be fantastic, but I'd like to think that we've got enough to be certainly competitive and hopefully not within the relegation regions, for the first team anyway. Second team, more of the same really. The first half of last year was a very poor time for the second team. The second half was almost completely different. We engaged with the village, we had a few more guys that were currently living in the village playing the second team. In fact, our second team is very hardcore village people. And indeed, so in some respects, so it's the first team. The second team is made of very, very, very hardcore village people, or people that are born and bred in the parish. And that really is a bit of a heartbeat for us. And I think we've got something going on the second team. I think we really have. The camaraderie is fantastic. I'm not going to sit here and say that we'll be in the upper echelons, but I think we'll have some good cricket. I think we'll enjoy it. We should be fine in Div 7. The big thing for us is the juniors. That is our massive area. It has been a huge, well, it's been a weakness, but we are really getting something going there. Watch this space with the kids, I think, really, in 2019.
Good, okay. Right, as you probably hear, it's getting massively rowdy here in Tangerine Bottles. The population is filling up, the beer is definitely flowing. So it's time for us to wrap up the podcast. Thank you very much for listening to episode 1, and we will see you next week for episode 2. Ben, thank you very much for being with me. And please make sure you like, comment, share, do whatever you can to the podcast to make sure that everybody can see it. If you heard somebody that you know mentioned in the very highest regard in this podcast, please let them know, tag them in, let's get involved. Thank you very much for listening. Good night.